Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind-the-scenes photos, videos, and interviews and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little known fact about my guest today. At a very young age, he decided he was a character actor. That decision was smart. He hasn't stopped working since. Welcome, Danny Burstein.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guest today is Danny Burstein, a six-time Tony Award nominee and a winner of countless awards for his work in the theater. Some of his Broadway credits include Fiddler on the Roof, Cabaret, Golden Boy, Follies, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, South Pacific, The Drowsy Chaperone, A Class Act, Titanic, Company, The Flowering Peach, Three Men on a Horse, St. Joan.
Still going.
The Seagull. Danny, I'll wake you up when I'm done reading your resume. And A Little Hotel on the Side. His film and television credits include Absolutely Fabulous, different characters in six episodes of Law & Order, Boardwalk Empire, Transamerica, Deception, The Family Fang, and Indignation. He is married to another Broadway legend, Rebecca Luker. Welcome, Danny Burstein.
It's great to be here. Thanks,
you Alana. Can wake up now.
Oh, my God.
Wake what the sleep out of your eyes.
Holy cow.
Well, guess what, my friend? You did all that.
I know. I'm old.
You are.
That's
you
all
are
I got from that.
A child star, clearly.
Well, started out very early, that's all.
In utero.
Not quite. I was 19.
Your mother tells a story. She knew. Well, let's talk about that because 19 is young. Most people don't continue to do whatever job they had at 19.
That's true.
Like, I am no longer working at the bakery on Cedar Lane in Teaneck, New Jersey, which was my job at 19.
Would you like to?
You know what?
Sometimes.
Was not bad.
After this interview, you're going to want to.
No, because you know what I loved about that job? I loved giving my friends big goods.
Oh, that's
right?
Great.
Like anything
yeah.
where you can share what you do and
yeah,
kind of
lovely.
Be charitable and generous at the same time. Mm-hmm. I don't know that my employers were thrilled with that, but I did feel like, what, are you going to sell tomorrow?
Right.
No.
Of course not.
No. So I would say that I'm not doing that anymore, although it would thrill me to no end to do it. But you are.
Yeah.
You started at 19. But I wondered, were you someone who began acting even younger than that as a kid? When did this begin to be your passion?
I knew I had a chance of doing it professionally when I got into the High School of Performing Arts when mm-hmm. I was 14. Actually, when I was 13, I auditioned for it and got in. And that year, over 4,000 kids auditioned and 127 made it in. And I was one of the 127 New York City public school kids who actually made it in, and it changed my life. And on the first day, the head of the drama department, Jerry Eskow, said, you know, if you don't want to be here and if you don't want to do this for the rest of your life, walk out that door. You know, we're like,
that's like, wait, is that the high school that the TV show Fame was based on? So, like, was it Debbie Allen who stood there with a stick in the opening credits, like, I'm going to work you hard? Like that.
That's exactly
so
right.
So he actually did a scared straight kind of moment with
exactly.
you guys.
Exactly. And when they filmed that movie on between my freshman and sophomore year in high school, and all the kids in the school were extras in the show, in the movie.
And are you
and
one of them?
I am one of the extras, yeah.
Like, are you dancing in the street around
I
the taxi cab?
Exactly right, and running up and down the stairs and through the hallways. Yeah, I'm one of those hundreds of kids.
And for a long
me.
Time when you started, I bet it was like Fame the movie on your resume. You know, and we would like pat our... No, I was in it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm totally in
it. You can see my arm. That was my arm.
That was the beginning.
Yeah, but and since then...
How thrilling.
I've just kept going. I've just, you know, been focused on it. I started doing community theater when I was 15 and enjoyed it and loved it. And then when I was... 18, I got into Queens College and studied with a guy named Edward Greenberg, who ran the St. Louis Muni, which is the largest outdoor theater in the country.
Yes, still is, right?
And, yeah. And he gave me my equity card, and he said, you should come to St. Louis for the summer and spend a season there. And I did, and I cut my teeth there and learned so much, and he put me in the ensemble of many shows over the years. And I, you know, learned so much from watching so many people. It was not about becoming famous. That was never my goal. My only goal was to really do good work and have the respect of my peers over the years. And that I set out to do that.
Wow.
Not just because I loved the work so much. And I still do. Still do. It's same. I have the same feeling that I did when I was 19. When I walk into a room for a first rehearsal or for a first day of filming, I love the excitement of it. And I try and pick projects that are interesting and blow my skirt up and make me happy.
So your teacher's name was Eddie, you said?
Edward Greenberg. Ed Greenberg.
Ed Greenberg.
Yeah.
Is he still alive?
No, he isn't. Unfortunately, he's no longer with
did
us.
Did he get to see some of your success?
Yes, he did.
He did? So of your shows, how long did he last as you continued to kind of rise to Broadway success?
Gotcha. He passed away in 95.
All right.
So the last Broadway show that he saw me do, I guess, was Company, the first revival of Company on Broadway.
Which I got to see. Extraordinary.
Yeah,
I
wonderful.
Sing that music a lot in my life. Don't be named Bobby around me is all I can say. Like, I can't actually start a conversation with anyone.
Yeah.
And my father's name is Bob. So you can imagine
of course.
All these years later, he's sure. like, I know.
I
there's
know.
A song.
Bobby, right.
Bobby, baby, do me. Okay. So before high school, was this something you did as a kid? Were you writing plays in your room? Were you?
I was not. I loved Broadway cast albums, but I also loved rock and roll as much. So right next to my poster of My Fair Lady was a poster of the Steve Miller Band, and on the other side of My Fair Lady was a poster of Abbey Road, the Beatles.
So you were your yin and yang were
yes.
in check. You sort of had a nice balance of appreciation.
Exactly. But I always loved shows. My parents had loads of cast albums. And, you know, I grew up loving shows like Finian's Rainbow in Oklahoma.
Right.
This is what they had, My Fair Lady.
And did you guys go to see theater growing up?
No.
You did not.
No.
You did not. You listened to it.
It's crazy. Yeah, my dad is teaches ancient Greek philosophy. He is a philosophy professor.
Not even funny thing happened on the way to the forum?
No,
like, you didn't even see that?
Well, the movie.
Yeah.
But my mom is a painter, and she also teaches painting. And so... you know, we didn't go, there were three boys and my parents were always working. And
right.
so we sort of had to fend for ourselves. And it came about just because I loved reading. My dad gave me a play, Peer Gynt by Ibsen. And I read it and I thought it was
there
kind
was
of
there was like a Marvel
wacky.
Comic on one shelf. And wait a minute, Danny,
Peer Gynt,
you
Ibsen.
Enjoy
I know.
Some light reading for a 9-year-old.
You know, I wasn't much of a reader before that. But I understood the dialogue form. It spoke to me. I was able to get into the story easier.
That's interesting.
And it wasn't didactic in any way. Instead, it was, you know, immersive. And I loved reading play. So I just started reading play after play after play after that. And that's how it all started.
So obviously you went to the High School of Performing Arts. Extraordinary that you got in.
Yeah.
So how did you even know about that? How did you know there's this high school where you can do this all the time?
Well, I had a teacher in junior high school at Parsons Junior High School, which we used to call Parsons Prison, which is, I don't know.
I'm sure he says that with so much love.
With so much love.
Nostalgia.
It's on the edge of Flushing in Jamaica.
Queens.
And Queens, exactly right. And I had a teacher there named Stuart Glazer, and we did a production of The Me Nobody Knows. It was the first thing that I ever really did. And afterwards, he said, you know, you should go to the High School of Performing Arts. And I said, great, what's
okay.
The High School of Performing Arts? And he explained it to me, this wonderful school where all these amazing people went, Liza Minnelli and Ben Vereen and on and on. And I said, great. He said, you have to prepare a couple of monologues. And I said, great. What's a monologue?
Sure.
I had no idea. And he said, you know, you have to know the monologue so well that if somebody woke you up in the middle of the night, you would be able to start that monologue at any place in the monologue and just do it verbatim. And I thought, okay. So I really worked on them really, really hard. And I didn't have any coaching or anything like that, but I had an idea of what those monologues could be. And I think I did one from The Time of Your Life, William uh-huh. Saroyan, and uh-huh. also from Dead End, I want to say.
Okay, so pretend you're asleep.
Yes.
I'm going to wake you up right now, and I want you to do a bit from Dead End. Go.
I can't remember anything.
Damn it.
I was 13.
Damn it. I felt like we were really onto something.
Son of a...
Well,
I really let you down.
I bet there are pieces of Tevye you probably could still do.
Sure, sure.
Seeing as that was your last
yes,
role.
Exactly.
It would be terribly tragic if just moments later.
It's true.
Although there is that feeling when you walk off stage after doing a run of sort of leaving the costume behind.
And, I do that,
and trying
actually.
To, like, get these lines out of my head. I don't
do
want
that.
Them anymore.
So many people ask me, you know, to actually do the same role again, like in Summer Stock or in other places. And I try not to do that. I try to move on. I kind of, in fact, I pride myself on the fact that the next job I do will hopefully be nothing like
right.
the last job I did. You know, Aldolfo in The Drowsy Chaperone was nothing like Billis in South Pacific, who was nothing like the trainer in Golden Boy, Tokyo, who was nothing like Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof.
Well, describe right now, who is the opposite? What is the, I mean, short of like playing like a baby girl.
Well, you know, I said to my agents,
yeah.
I tell them, please, and I push them. I say, you know, and they're fantastic. It took them a little while to get me.
Right.
But I said, you know, let's push the envelope. Let's really, really explore what you think I can do. And I'm going to go even further. And I told them, keep looking for jobs
right.
that are really wacky and will stretch me and make me really work hard and use my imagination. So one day, about 8-9 years ago, I got an email from my agent, and he said, I found the perfect part for you. It was an independent film. And he said, the role is a gay deaf pedophile that works in a pizza shop. And I thought, Eureka! That's it!
And the Oscar goes to...
Exactly right.
Right, because I was thinking, like, post-Tevye, like, a serial killer? Like, it really would
yeah.
have to be someone whose intentions are the opposite of good.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And I worked on it very hard, and I actually wound up getting the film.
That was a real thing.
It was a real thing. And it's a terrific film called Nor'easter. It's really, really kind of proud of my work in it. And I studied ASL, sign language, for 2 months before. I studied with 3 different teachers. I worked very hard. I had to learn how to make a pizza the way they make it in Maine, because that's where we filmed.
I stared at children I didn't know in schoolyard playgrounds.
That I didn't do.
Wow.
That I had to imagine.
Wow. So Nor'easter.
Yeah.
Everybody just leave the podcast for a minute, watch the movie,
no,
and come back.
Oh, okay. You can
that sounds amazing. So that's great that you can kind of... So you're kind of a magician. Like, you can manifest an idea of something, and then it gets brought to you.
Well, I try to be different. I think that's part of the gig. You know, I love being a character actor.
Can we talk about that? When
sure.
people say character actor,
yeah.
because to me, you are, by the very definition of acting, playing a character. But there is some idea of, like, the leading man mm-hmm. versus the character actor.
Right.
Is that what we're talking about when someone says, I'm a character actor?
That's exactly right. It is usually the sidekick or... I was, I don't know whether I was smart or whatever, but I was realistic about it. I looked in the mirror when I was younger and I went, I'm not the young leading man. I'm just not. I'm not tall and pretty and any of that. I'm losing my hair. I'm, you know, I'm this slightly overweight, stocky guy. And that actually afforded me an interesting way into making a living in this business. I loved finding all those weird characters that nobody thought that I could play, or having characters that everybody thought they understood or knew, and making them different in some way.
So you never tried to transform into someone else's idea of what a successful actor might look like?
No, I didn't know what that meant anyway. Right. I never had any, you know, nobody in my family was an actor and knew nothing about it. So I just had this idea of being somebody different. And there were actors that I loved that I, you know, still love to this day, Spencer Tracy and Paul Scofield specifically. And those guys were always just real and honest. And that was my goal. But to set parameters. So whatever particular role I was playing, I always say it's a game. Whatever particular the rules of the game are at that particular time, then you try and push the envelope.
So to that end, I mean, to me, I thought about, you know, when you think of a character actor, and then I looked at so many of, you know, photographs. I do a lot of research before I have someone come in to this podcast booth, even if I know them, because there's so much work I want to uncover or things about them. And I thought one of the things that you talked about is sort of the thrill of coming out the stage door after a play and people looking at you for a moment and going, oh, no, he wasn't in the play.
Right.
Right. Like this idea that you have completely transformed. You know, Adolfo is a perfect example.
Yeah,
and
a perfect example.
Wigs and costumes and and accents. And then out comes this normal-looking human being at the door. And so the thrill of winning in that way.
I was in L.A. Not too long ago and had an interview with a casting director. And she said, you know, I realize I've seen you many times, but I just didn't know it was always you. And so that's good and bad, she told me. I was like, because you're not marketable as this thing.
Right.
Because the whole business wants to make you, wants to pigeonhole you and wants to say, oh, he's the funny sidekick who does this, or he's the Latin lover, or he's the New Yorkie guy, or he's the whatever, or the bully, or whatever. And I just have tried to change people's minds about that or keep them on their toes. What actually, after it happened again, what you talked about just recently, because after Fiddler on the Roof, after I took my final bow, I went off stage and shaved my beard immediately.
Wow.
And then had some champagne in my room, and then we were off to go to the closing night party and walked out the stage door. And many people asked me whether I knew whether I knew if Tevye was coming out, or they asked me who I played in the show because they had no idea.
I was Tevye's beard.
That's good. That's
a
good line.
Let's talk about this. So Danny just did an extraordinary run. Was it a year?
It was a little over a year. Yeah,
a little over.
It was 14 months, I think, of that. But I had been working on it for a long time.
I'm sure.
Probably 2 years.
Playing one of the most iconic roles in Broadway history and on film as well.
Yeah.
He played Tevye, the lead, the dad, in Fiddler on the Roof, one of my all-time favorite films and all-time favorite musicals. I could sing every word to every song. And literally when I went to see you on Broadway, I feel like people around me were like, this is not karaoke. Like you are not, this is not like Sound of Music in the Park where we're all singing together.
Right.
But it was remarkable for me to realize, well, I really do know. This soundtrack is such a part of my family's history and my introduction to Broadway when you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I call it musical theater mother's milk.
Yes, it really was. And I, you know, I can picture the cast album perfectly that I would lie on bed listening to. And to say you are extraordinary in that part is the understatement of the century.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
But I would like to know, because the beard is such a huge part of that character's identity.
Yeah.
What was that like shaving it off after all that time?
It was liberating. It really was. I actually missed my face. Mm. I, you know, and you know, we knew for 5.5 months our closing date, which is an amazing luxury.
Yes.
You know, time was when I started out, they would, you know, they would gather.
Tomorrow is actually your closing day.
They would gather the cast and they would say, you know, we're closing on Thursday or we're closing on Sunday. And that was it. Now you get 6 months, 3 months, 2 months. That's an amazing luxury because it gives you time to plan the rest of your life after that, which is wonderful. But I started.
And pace yourself.
Yes. I go back and forth between having facial hair and not having facial hair.
Depending
on what role I'm playing. So over
but
the last.
But in your daily life, when you're not working, are you a guy who shaves or a guy who likes to have a little scruff?
I like to have a little. I shave like once every 9 days.
Because people want to know this.
I just shaved this morning, anybody wants to know.
If there was ever a moment that I was sad, this was radio.
My beard for Tevye was down to almost my nipples, if you will. And it became a little crazy because I would actually wake myself up at night because my arm would be laying on my beard and my neck couldn't move. So I just went, you know what? The hell with the commitment. Yeah. I have to shave this
Daddy's
thing.
Getting a trim.
Daddy's getting a trim. So, you know, I went in front of the mirror and just started keeping it at a certain length. And it was much shorter than it was when I first started out. It just became too crazy in my regular normal life.
Yeah. A little too shalom aleichem under the circumstances.
Yeah.
Right. I just was imagining you like strangling yourself.
Well, it's kind
like,
of
get
like
off me, get off me.
You can't zip up anything or button your collar or any without hair getting, you know, in your buttonhole.
What you do for your art, Danny Burstein, there should be an award for that, Best Beard Award.
There should be a Best Beard Award.
So you felt liberated.
I did.
And you must have felt very different very quickly.
I did. My wife didn't matter. It didn't matter to her one way or the other. She likes me,
really?
You know, with the beard or
really
without the beard.
Really, months in, wasn't she like, it's actually down. It is long and unruly, and now I'm getting strangled by the beard, too. No, she was just a sweetheart about it.
She never said anything, absolutely anything, no.
Well, she's, Rebecca Luker, you are a goddess.
Yeah, well, she's a very kind person. There's no doubt about it.
Yes, I look forward to having her in the same chair you are sitting in one day because she's done 1 million unbelievably beautiful, iconic roles as well.
She does. I mean, she's an amazing. She opens her mouth. This is what I tell people all the time. She opens her mouth and her heart falls out. She's, you know.
Now
she
that's
has
dangerous.
That, it could be dangerous.
Don't try this.
It's better
at home,
than a
kids.
Gallbladder.
Yes.
You know, she has this beautiful gift that, you know, it's this voice from heaven.
Yeah.
And I never had anything like that myself. I never took. I'm scared to take voice lessons. I never really took voice lessons. I took speech lessons and how to, you know, keep my my instrument, you know, working as far as that
well, that's
goes,
kind of
but
extraordinary,
not singing.
Because I mean, you can say that you're not a singer.
I'm really not.
Well, you are, and I have read a list of musicals here that will prove it, that you were paid for, that you recorded. But not only that, the idea that you have this natural gift, that you can also play with your voice for different characters, but also sustain 8 shows a week without vocal training.
Right.
How do you do that?
Well, it is killer to do it. You have to live like a monk.
Do you not speak often, like, from all day until like 5 o'clock in the evening, like certain Broadway stars?
Honestly, I didn't. During Tevye, I couldn't speak really during the day at all. That was in order to get through 8 a week. But near the end of the run, I was doing 7, and the last week I did 6 because my body was so tired. You know, if you use a muscle
without resting it ever,
you know, eventually it's going to go, you know what? I can't do that anymore. You have to pace yourself properly. And by the end of it, I wasn't. I was doing so many things that it was impossible to pace myself that way. But for 90% of the run, 99% of the run, I did 8 performances a week. And it was very, very difficult. I took one vacation in 14 months of performances. And it was, you know, not to me, it really was not enough. I should have taken one more so I could have, you know, gotten through the end. But I wanted to, you know, really barrel through and do as many as I could. I didn't want to miss a moment of it. I really loved doing that show.
I felt that. And I saw it toward the end, and I still felt that. There was not, what's the expression, phoning it in? There was not that there were phones in Onatopka, but there was not one moment that didn't feel completely full and rejoicing in the material and with your co-stars. It was really exciting to see. I wanted to ask you about, there's a story that... Well, you can tell me if this is true or not. Is
okay.
it true?
No.
That you and you were, that when you got arrested, is it true?
That is true.
When you, have you ever been arrested?
No.
Do you have any criminal record of any kind?
No, nothing. No, I'm not even a little bit.
Okay, you've never stolen anything?
I've never smoked pot. I've never taken nothing. Beer is my worst, the fact that I have a beer at night, maybe.
A keg party every once in a while.
Once in a
is
while.
That's so wrong.
Every night.
Kegger in Verstein's dressing room. Are you a prankster?
No, not really.
Okay.
No, I don't like it on stage. Mm. I mean, if it happens, stuff happens all the time on stage. But there are people who go out on stage trying to make other people break up. I don't get into that. I think the people paid a lot of money to be there that night.
Right.
And we, at the least, should give them a great show.
Yes.
And I think as the show goes on, you should really work hard to make the show better and better. Anywhere along the continuum, it should get better and better, and
not sillier and sillier,
and more and deeper and more heartfelt.
Right, like real relationships.
Yeah,
that over time deepen and build. I once did a play called Wrong Mountain, which had too short a life on Broadway.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I've been there. Believe me, I know.
It happens. But you know what? That same play, it's so ironic. David Herson, who's this extraordinary writer, he'd also written a play called Labette you might have heard of. That same play that we did on Broadway, of course, won the Olivier Award in London. So
that's the way it goes.
Different strokes for different folks.
Tell me about it.
But I had a baby in the play, and there was a doll in like an old-fashioned kind of British pram that I would push the baby out.
Right.
And to your feeling like we need to be respectful, one of the crew guys who I totally had a crush on, and I want to take complete responsibility for the fact that there was a flirt going on.
Right.
So it wasn't outrageous that he would try to make me laugh because I tried to make him laugh every time I was backstage pre-entrance.
Sure.
So I want to take responsibility for my part. There's two parts to every story.
Of course.
However.
So with that caveat.
With that caveat that I'm not perfect.
Right.
I wheel the stroller out and then like there's a perfect sound effect that really makes it sound like the baby in the stroller is crying. And I look inside the stroller and the baby has no eyes. Like the eyes had been gouged out of the doll.
Oh my God.
And it was really shocking. And when you have a doll that you've used as your baby, like for a long time,
the show,
we had done it out of town and we'd come in.
Yeah.
Like I really felt like that was my baby.
Yeah.
I had endowed it with a lot of human real life characteristics. And suddenly to see like a baby with no eyes, like it really messed up my show.
Yeah, of course. And, little things like that do.
I mean, it was good that I knew that because it made it clear like we're not going to date. Because if we date and then get married and have a baby, he might do something bad to the baby. So
I hadn't gone that far.
Sometimes it's good. We find out very early on who people are.
It's true.
Did you ever have any mishaps during Fiddler on the Roof or any Broadway shows where a prop wasn't it supposed to be or you had to improvise in some way?
That happens over the course of a long run. Anything and everything happens. And you have to be prepared for it. And in a way, I enjoy that kind of stuff because it forces you to really be in the moment and listen, which is the most important part of acting, and continue forward. A huge set pieces did not come in.
In Fiddler?
In Fiddler, yeah.
So
we were all, stranded in this big open stage and the barn wasn't there. And we're talking about being in the barn and there was no barn.
Do you improvise at all, like to kind of let the audience know, not hey, the set piece didn't work, but this feels like I'm in a barn. Or do you just keep going?
Well, you try and keep going. And if you can, indicate it in some way and help the audience out and help your cast members out. And because there are always going to be one or two people, finding it hysterical on stage, and trying to, and turning up stage.
They're cold all of a sudden. Their shoulders are going up. And one of the actors here go like, "Ooh." When you were 19, is this true, Danny Burstein, you wrote a letter to Stephen Sondheim because you were doing a play of his at school.
Yeah.
And were mystified by one of the characters you were playing or weren't sure what to do. And you thought, I'm going to go to the source.
That is true. I was 18. And Ed Greenberg, who was directing the musical, cast me in as Frank in Merrily We Roll Along. And it had just closed 3 months before on Broadway. And it was a famously troubled time getting that
documentary about it,
getting that musical up, and what was the right way to go with the characters? You know, the people. Some people booed apparently at shows, if you can believe it. And Ed decided to direct that show because it had a lot of young people in it, and I was cast as Frank, and it's really, really a hard character to figure out. And I didn't know what to do. And a friend of mine said, well, you know who you should ask? You should ask Stephen Sondheim. And I went, yeah,
good idea,
good
Bart.
Good idea, you know. Yeah. But, and he went, no. I have a friend who has his address.
What?
So I thought, okay, what the hell? So I wrote this letter with a million questions about the show and about the character and how what they were thinking. And within the week, I got a letter back from Steve Sondheim, saying all those questions would have to be answered in a letter the size of War and Peace. Here's my number. Give me a call. Let's get together and we can talk this through. And maybe I can help. So I think it was about 3 weeks later, I found myself in his townhouse in Turtle Bay. And he walked in.
Hi, Mr. Sondheim.
Yeah, and he and James Lapine were working on Sunday in the Park. Lapine walked out. You know, he was like, oh, hello, that's James Lapine. And he sat.
James, do you know Danny?
That was one of those.
Oh, my
and he
God.
And I sat down on his couch, and he said, I'll be right back. Came back with this enormous carafe of white wine and two glasses. Boom. Sat it down on the table, and he said, okay, what do you want to know? How can I help? And for the next 3 hours, I got an amazing education on not only musical theater and not only Merrily We Roll Along, but what it was like to be a creative force in the theater and what his life had been like and how he was trying to make a difference and how he was trying to write and what it meant to write. And
That's extraordinary.
It was extraordinary and astounding. And honestly, it's the reason I'm here. Right now,
on Little Known Facts.
On Little Known Facts, because I, you know, decided a long time ago if Stephen Sondheim can give back to 18-year-old Danny Burstein,
right. I'll share too.
The least I can do is show up, and I do a lot of talks for, you know, I go to schools, and I've gone back to all my alma maters and all the, ironically, all the schools that turned me down, like Yale and NYU and Juilliard. I've taught master classes.
I'm sure you open with that. I'll show them. I'll show them all.
I just couldn't help it. I just had to say yes when they asked.
Of course. It's always nice to be invited when you're no longer auditioning, especially. So then years later, when you star in Follies, mm-hmm. another Stephen Sondheim incredible show, did he remember that story?
Well, we'd actually worked together before that twice.
Company?
I did Company, of course, and Merrily We Roll Along off-Broadway.
Did he remember this event, or did he do it for so many young kids that it was less special in some ways
actually,
for him?
I don't know how many people he did it for, but I know Lonnie Price, he told me that he did it for him as well. I don't know how many young people had the chutzpah to
actually
write.
Do it at that age.
But I did, and he was unbelievably kind, and it influences me to this day, and I'll never forget it.
So he has a reputation for being incredibly generous and kind mm-hmm. in the way that you just described, but also really intimidating mm-hmm. to work with. What is it like to really work with Stephen Sondheim as a grown person, a colleague in one of his pieces?
I think it took me a while not to be so incredibly intimidated, and I think he doesn't want to be incredibly intimidating. He said if he wasn't a writer for the musical theater, he would be a teacher.
It's extraordinary. You know, I talk a lot with actors who are on this show who are film and television actors as well, and we talk a lot about what it means, the responsibility of being number one on a call sheet, mm-hmm. which means you are, you know, the person with the biggest part or stardom, and how much you become a leader of a project based on your billing in that way.
Yeah.
And that in recent years, you have joined the leagues of number one on the call sheet, as it were, mm-hmm. of a Broadway cast, right?
Yeah.
Like for Cabaret, it would be Alan Cumming, or there's Bernadette Peters, or John Lithgow, all the different people along the way who you've worked with, who were the star.
And all of them were great teachers.
Right, and leaders, right?
And leaders.
So what does that mean? Like, if you were at the center, like, you're Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. Mm-hmm. You're the MC in Cabaret. There are certain parts, you know, you're playing Rose in Gypsy. There are certain parts that historically are at the center of the thing, and often it comes with a certain amount of experience, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you to be at the center of a show, and what is your responsibility to this family being created?
In Fiddler, you're literally the papa.
Mm-hmm.
So
how does that go?
The papa, exactly.
Right.
The papa.
Tradition.
It is a huge responsibility to be in that position. And as I said, I had great, great teachers, Bernadette and Alan and Lithgow and Sigourney Weaver and on and on. And they taught me that it was not about their personalities. It was about the work. Mm. And that was the most important thing, coming in every night, showing up and leading by example and not being a diva backstage, but being kind to everyone and knowing everybody's name in the theater. So you know the usher's names, you know the doorman's name, you know all the stagehand's name. They are no different from anybody else in the cast. The PA working on the show is just as important as the person you're playing opposite. And if you walk in that door with that attitude that everybody is there to work on this project together, to tell the best story that they can every single night, then I think it's golden. You'll be fine, as long as you keep your stupid ego out of the way. At the end of the day, it means nothing. It's meaningless. Fame, it means nothing. I've you know, some wonderful actors that I've worked with who do a lot of films, you know, they all say the same thing. Fame is overrated. Mm-hmm. And they sort of shake their heads. And it is. It means nothing. It's not a good thing, necessarily. It kind of ruins lives. So I'm very happy with just doing the work and trying to find projects that are exciting.
Fame being overrated, as mm-hmm. it may be, there's something kind of incredible when you're an actor, a working actor for a long time, and you really were like a workhorse, mm-hmm. getting offers versus auditioning.
Right.
There's something incredible at that moment when that happens for the first time,
yeah,
in a big way,
right.
Not like come do a reading or come do something far away.
Sure.
So what was your first offer for Broadway?
My first Broadway show was an offer.
Which was... A Little Hotel on the Side?
A Little Hotel on the Side, which is a Feydeau farce. I had worked with Tony Randall in Summerstock in the 80s, and he was talking about forming a National Actors Theater, repertory company on Broadway. He had been for years.
And it happened.
And we'd worked together in Summerstock. We did a production of Around the World in 80 Days.
Wait, so your teacher who brought you out to the Muni,
mm-hmm.
is that where you met Tony Randall?
That's right.
My God, this man is responsible for
everything.
I feel like he's responsible for me. Unbelievable. So
he's amazing. He was amazing.
Just the domino effect of all the good things that happen. So you go to the Muni and...
And one of the people that
I met
there...
Did you grow up watching The Odd Couple
I
did?
Of course.
It's Tony Randall.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Of course. And sadly, so many people don't know who he is
anymore. I don't even know
to that. I don't know how to speak to that either. I mentioned him to people in interviews and... A lot of the people have no idea who he is.
So if you went like, Oscar, they would know.
Oh, Oscar. Yeah, so
can you do a Tony Randall
impression? Well, you know what? When in 91, when he called me for that job, out of the blue, I hadn't talked to him in like 2 years, and I picked up the phone and I heard, Danny, Tony Randall. Just like that.
God.
And he offered me a role in his repertory company. And I did, I think, one or two roles, maybe I covered, but I was in my first show with A Little Hotel on the Side.
Was he in it?
He was in it as well, and Marianne Plunkett and Lynn Redgrave and some kid making his Broadway debut named Rob Lowe was in it.
Hacksaw. Well.
All of them.
And that's a Redgrave.
Lynn.
Sorry, Lynn.
Yeah, it was a fantastic group of people.
What happened to that theater? And it lasted a few years.
It did. And unfortunately, it didn't last.
It didn't stay
because
when he left?
He had to make such a big splash in order to get it up and running that people took him down because of it. And they said, oh, it's just sort of some kind of ego trip. And he got a lot of flack for that. And so the excitement turned into this ugliness that started coming his way. And he found it harder and harder to raise money for the company. But there were some wonderful, wonderful productions that the National Actors Theater put on. And I was very, very honored to, I mean, one of them, I mean, for God's sakes, I did St. Joan on Broadway with Marianne Plunkett and John Neville, the great English actor. And that was, you know, and Michael Langham directed it.
Were you a company?
Was
there an
official? Yeah.
Official. Was there an official company?
There was an official company.
I'm going to get T-shirts made. It's official. So you got offers straight away.
Well, I was lucky enough to. Of course, I had to audition for, you know, many, many other things.
Did you audition for Adolfo?
Yeah. I did the first reading of it. I did the first two readings of it in the United States. They had done it in Canada with an all-Canadian cast because the writers were Canadian. And then when they brought it to the United States, I did a couple of readings of it, and it went famously. And then they asked Casey Nicholaw to direct and choreograph his first Broadway show. And so I auditioned for Casey. But I knew Casey. We were chorus boys together in different shows. And I love – he's, as far as I'm concerned, one of the great greatest maybe ever director choreographers we've ever had. He's so smart and so ridiculously funny.
Do you prepare differently for a musical than you do a straight play?
Well, just in, as far as the music goes, as far as the singing.
Do you read music?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But my ultimate goal is just to do the most honest work that I can do, given the rules of the game.
Yes.
Again.
Are you superstitious? Do you have like a pre-show ritual where that repeats itself?
I think every show that I do has – I sort of form my own ritual, you know, depending on what the show is and what is required of that show. I'm very much a creature of habit. I get into the same routines between shows. I try and have I tend to have the same dinner and at the same time, and I'd like to take a 20-minute nap, and I, you know, that kind of thing.
And so it becomes a routine. And if for some reason it can't happen on a Tuesday, mm-hmm. are you freaked out before the show? Like, wait,
no.
I didn't put my ring over here, and I didn't have the steamed broccoli at this hour. No, you're fine.
No, yeah.
Like, it doesn't freak you out.
No, I don't get freaked out easily. I'm more of, you know, I'm a middle child. There are an older brother and a younger brother, and I was the peacemaker.
So it's
so
all...
you know what? Everything will be... everything works
you're
out.
You're Switzerland.
It takes a lot to get me riled up.
One of your talents among many is you're really fast and you're really funny in life and on stage. And that's not always the case. So sometimes I wonder, I meet people and they're like, oh my God, like Dan Fogler was here and he was like, I was entertaining my entire family at dinner everywhere. You know, I wasn't the best student, but I could kind of charm my teachers. Like there was a way in which they learned very quickly. This feels great. Like I'm making this thing. I say it. It comes out of my mouth. Everyone's laughing. This is happy making.
Yeah, I was more calm and, you know, and more Switzerland.
That's,
as you said, I talked to friends who were with me at the High School of Performing Arts, and nobody thought that I had any potential whatsoever.
Thank you.
Thank you very
Those
much.
Those are really good friends.
Good friend. We're very close. And, you know, it took me a while to discover that I could do that kind of stuff. It wasn't the... To me, that's never the reason I got involved in it in the first place. I loved the work. I loved the plays and the projects. And so it's only as I've gotten older that I've sort of started talking back.
Being confident.
Being more
confident in that part of your... So where did you meet Rebecca?
On Rikers Island.
Back to the arrest. Yes.
Which never happened.
She was your warden.
She was.
She still is.
Yes. Very soft hands.
Well, that's what you want in a warden.
Exactly right. But she was very strict.
Yes. Again, exactly what you want with a warden.
We met, we were both in other relationships. We met doing a show called Time and Again.
I thought you were in a show called Other Relationships.
Other Relationships.
Yes, we met doing Other Relationships.
But we weren't romantically involved. And but we became great friends. There were five of us. It was a show out of town that Jack O'Brien was directing, a new musical that was going to come into New York based on the Jack Finney novel called Time and Again. And Howard McGillin, Jessica Malasky, Rebecca, myself, and George Dvorsky, the five of us became very close.
I would have respected you marrying any one of those people.
Me too. They are
all amazing and talented.
Incredibly brilliant people.
Great.
And after it was over, about a year and a half later or so, we were cast opposite each other in Barry Manilow's musical called Harmony, and we did a reading of it. And I said,
I don't know that musical.
It never made it to New York. It's okay. Another one of those shows.
I love Barry Manilow. Did you get to meet Barry Manilow?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we did the show with him. He was great.
Are you friends with him?
No, I'm not. I mean, you know, I'm friendly with him if I saw him. We'd, of course, know who we are.
Okay.
But, I mean, at least I think.
You would know who he is.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly. We were sitting, we were playing opposite each other, and I said, at the first day, how's it going with you? And she said, well, you know, not well. My relationship is broken up. And I said, well, I'm separated.
Good news.
Yes. And the heavens opened up and the sun poured out its heavenly rays. And we slowly, over the course of that rehearsal, doing that two-week reading, started dating and went on a date after it was over, about a week after that.
Do you guys look for things to do together?
You know, we have, but it hasn't really manifested itself since doing Harmony, that show, which we wound up doing at the La Jolla Playhouse, and another Broadway musical that never made it
right
into New York.
I feel like, I just want to say on that one, it might have been as simple as the title.
Harmony?
I don't know. It's not quite enough. It doesn't let me know enough about what I'm going to say.
Got it. Barry, if you're listening,
yes.
Change the title.
Yes, because I feel like the album names that he's had have been, I don't know. I'm just saying we can revisit Harmony. That might be what you and Rebecca bring back to Broadway.
Oh, I think we're a little long in the tooth
you
at
think?
This point. Yeah.
You're a character actor.
That's true.
And also your wife, not long in the tooth. Anyway, I guess I wonder if you can think of, I mean, you've worked with so many incredible people along the way, and it sounds like the takeaway is mentorship and teachers and giving back and community. Was there advice that you got early on that has really stayed with you that you can think of?
Well, the first time I met Tony Randall, we were on the in a rehearsal platform. They have these outdoor platforms at the St. Louis Muni. And he was an idol of mine, needless to say. And growing up in New York with The Odd Couple going on all the time.
You'd be like, which building on Central Park West is it real? Like, all of it. All
amazing.
Of it.
And I had these wonderful roles opposite him. I had four roles opposite him in the show. And each time he would go to a different city in the show, I would be there as a different character, dressed differently with a different accent. It was
so
a wonderful
fun.
Role. You know, wonderful character actors, you know,
a
wet
feast.
Dream. Wet dream.
A feast.
Really perfect. And for some reason, he felt the need to feel me out a little bit. And he said, so tell me about yourself. And I said, well, you know, I'm about to go to graduate school, about to get married. There's a lot going on in my life. And he said, graduate school? For what? I said, for theater, for acting. He said, so you'll have a master's and you'll be able to teach acting? And I said, yeah, I'll be able to teach acting. He said, if you had an acting class in front of you right now, what would you tell them was the most important part of acting? And I was so green and nervous, and I stuttered, and he was my idol, for God's sakes. And I said, well, my favorite acting teachers always said that acting is doing and acting is reacting. And he went, listening. And I said, well, that's very much a part of reacting, don't you think? He said, don't argue with me, you asshole. You should get down on your knees and thank me for telling you this. And then he stood up and said, it takes 10 years to learn how to listen. 10 years. And he walked away. And believe it or not, that was the best piece of advice I've ever gotten on acting. To listen. To actually be in the moment every single second. To actually listen. Because you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
It's happening live. And you have to be present and listen. And it changes the way you read your lines every single second. So it's not about, oh, God, my line's coming up. Oh, God, my line's coming up. It is about listening and then responding and being real. And it took me about 10 years to get it. Even though he called me an asshole the first time I met him.
He didn't mean it.
He didn't mean it. And he loved me. And we became great friends. And, you know, we'd go to his house on Thanksgiving. And I adored him. I really did. And I adore his widow, Heather, and their two beautiful kids, Jefferson and Julia.
God, I was thinking as you said that now I'm not standing there going, what's my line? It's really, what is my next line? Mm-hmm. When you talk about becoming a certain age.
Yes, of
do
course.
Do you have any trouble with lines?
Oh, I did. You know what? I actually went through a thyroid thing not too long ago. Right before Fiddler started, they told me I had cancer for two weeks.
Great.
Yeah, I know.
Great news.
Yeah, thyroid cancer.
You got to have you.
I know. But you may not be able to.
You won't live to see it.
It was an interesting time. It was more like 3 weeks. Anyway.
Three weeks before, like, the biopsy came back.
Before they actually gave me a proper diagnosis.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, one of the things about the thyroid is it controls things like memory and how tired you are and on and on. They call it the little general in your body. And so I was getting very tired and forgetful. And it was it took a very long time playing with meds to actually regulate my thyroid to be absolutely normal. So I have to take, you know, a couple of pills every morning. Yeah, that's it.
Still.
There's no side effects whatsoever. It could go away at any time.
So the twitch I'm seeing right now, not related.
Twitch? What are you talking about?
Not related
at
all.
It also regulates moods.
Great.
Great.
That's great. So don't miss a pill.
No,
that's really
exactly
the lesson. So you had it. You had that thing happen.
I had that thing happen where all of a sudden I would
Danny,
go,
Danny, we need to tell you something.
What the hell is going on? Yes. And I had that. And I had those, you know, long needles stuck into my neck and, you know, for biopsies. It was really amazing. You learned that. One thing I learned, that I wasn't afraid to die, which was very interesting. But at the same time, it made me very sad because I would miss all the things that my kids would go through, like getting married and having their own kids of
right.
their own and growing old, you know, with my wife. That's what I felt bad about. But at the same time, I sort of went, all right, if this is I'm going to die soon. But I'm more sad about those things than my own mortality.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, so it was an interesting time. And all that happened right before Fiddler on the Roof.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Did you have to tell the producers, like, hey, you should know this thing is going on?
I did
on?
Not until I got the doctors are telling me, you know, we're 90% sure that this is the way it is and this is the way it
goes. We think you're going to get a Tony nomination. We're actually 99% sure of that. Wow. Wow. That's incredible. I didn't know that. And how lucky for you, for your family, and for all of us that you're okay. We don't all get to kind of have that moment of really reckoning, like, how do I want to live my life?
Right.
Because there is something finite here being presented to me.
Yeah.
And then to find out that actually not right now, you're okay. It's incredible.
It was an interesting journey.
Do you feel different now?
I feel like a little girl.
No, that's your next role. A little girl serial killer.
Wouldn't I love to? Who makes pizzas in Maine.
And signs as she does it. Is there an audition story that you have from your past that's humorous?
I auditioned probably about 25 years ago. I auditioned for Little Shop of Horrors.
My favorite.
That was being done in Galveston, Texas.
Of course.
And it was just the director and the guy playing the piano in the room. And I went in. And it was at the old John Houseman Theater on 42nd Street, which
Theater
is no
Row,
longer there on Theater Row. And
I
went into the basement there and gave the pianist my music and started singing my audition song, whatever the hell it was.
Oh, I wish you remember it.
I'm thinking it was Need to Know, which is a song that I did in a musical that didn't go very well.
Harmony.
called Weird Romance, that was off Broadway, that was written by Alan Menken and David Spencer. It was after Little Shop of Horrors, and they were trying to, you know, capitalize on the fame. It was also at the WPA Theater where Little Shop had started.
Amazing.
Anyway, I think that's what the song was.
Okay. You'll sing it. You'll sing us out with that song.
Okay.
After the story.
And I gave the guy my music, and I said, you know, I'm going to sing this song, and I started singing. And just as I started singing, the guy looked at me and gave me a funny look and then started looking around the room. And just while he was sitting there looking around the room and then bent down and got his briefcase off of the floor and opened up his briefcase and started rifling through papers in his briefcase. And I was, you know, three lines into my song, and he's going through, not looking at me, not paying attention.
It's a great feeling,
at
isn't
all.
It?
Terrific. He's going through his papers in his briefcase, and he closes the briefcase, and he looks around and goes, huh. And then walks to the far corner of the room, again, with his back to me, not facing me at all, and starts rifling through the garbage can. The waste paper basket, and looking through the waste paper basket on one knee, going to, I look at the guy playing the piano, and he gives me a look like, don't ask me, I don't know what's going on either. So I finish my song, and he puts the waste paper basket down from the corner and starts walking back to me, and he says, well, I don't know where the callback sheet is, but you've got a callback.
So, listeners, if during your song you feel they're distracted, ordering lunch,
right,
reading their mail, really what it means is you got this.
You got a call back.
You got this. All right, what was the song?
It was Need to Know. I'm trying to remember it. I'm 10 years old. I'm at the local duplex. The science fiction matinee at 2. I don't recall the movie, but the aliens were groovy, and I wondered how they make the actors blue. So when I get home, I fill the tub with fizzies. 30, 40 fizzies, purple grape. I soak for 7 hours. I get these funny streaks. They won't come off in showers. People laugh at me for weeks. That's the beginning of it.
That's the beginning and the end. I am so grateful that you spent this time with me today.
Yay,
and to get to
great.
Tell you in person, I admire you, and you have brought so much joy, not just to me, but to my family and millions of others who get to see you on stage.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate you. As extraordinarily kind as you are talented is a rare thing. And thank you for coming today.
I had a great time. Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime. All right, we did it. If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast, and on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hanger Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media. Located in Times Square, Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.